For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring. Hey, I just sat down with the owners and operators of Maui Nui Venison. They're on a mission to balance axis deer populations on Maui while giving back to the community and run a totally sustainable operation. For folks like me who want to get your own meat but aren't always successful, you can become a snack subscriber, get some axis deer sticks sent right to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNui. Venison.com and use promo code CAL for 20% off your first order. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. That's SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
From Meteor's World News Headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, this is Cal's Week in Review presented by Steel. Steel products are available only at authorized dealers. For more, go to SteelDealers.com. Now, here's your host, Ryan Cal Callahan.
The host of a popular hunting show in Canada has pleaded guilty to multiple wildlife crimes and has been fined more than $30,000. Michael Beaulieu, or Beaulieu. Michael Beaulieu. Let's gonna go with Beaulieu, like Beaulieu the bear, is the host of the Alpine Carnivore TV show. And you may also know him from a popular Instagram account, I assume by the same name. According to law enforcement officials, Beaulieu and his wife committed these crimes in 2020 and 2021 in both Alberta and British Columbia. Search warrants of their home and office uncovered tons of evidence, including sheep and moose parts that were matched with kill sites in Alberta. Shell casings from the sheep killed in Alberta also matched the firearm officer seized in British Columbia. What did these two admit to doing? In British Columbia, Beaulieu admitted to allowing his hunting license to be used by another party and was fined $4,500. His wife, Lynn, admitted to hunting without a license and received a $2,000 penalty. They will also be banned from hunting in the province for 1 year. Their crimes in Alberta were even more serious. There, they admitted to hunting without a license, hunting in a closed season, unlawful possession of wildlife, unlawful export of wildlife, providing false information, as well as abusing license requirements in relation to the killing of bighorn sheep, antlered moose, and antlered elk within a protected wilderness area. The pair was fined $25,000. In addition, all wildlife seized was forfeited to the government. For his part, Beaulieu posted a video online apologizing to his fans for his actions and admitting to the violations for which he was convicted, but he claims that he never meant to break any laws on any of the three hunts in question. On the sheep hunt, he says he entered into an area he wasn't allowed to hunt without realizing it. On the moose hunt, he says he didn't realize that in Alberta, unlike in Ontario, the province he grew up in, it's illegal for either of two hunters to shoot at an animal with only one tag. On the bear hunt, he says he let his wife use one of his bear tags, again, without realizing that that was illegal. Now, there's a lot of unknowns when you're talking about the actions of another person that you don't know and you weren't there and you've never met. So I'm not going to take that on. But Yannis Patelis of Meat Eater fame, a man who has... Yanni, how many... episodes have you produced?
Of Meat Eater?
Yeah.
I don't know, 50.
He has produced around 50 episodes of the Meat Eater show himself. He also runs his own show that you can see across multiple channels. The guy's got a lot of experience. And so I'm going to dip off and let you listen to Yannis Patelis' subtle tones on what he thinks could be the motivation for stepping outside the law or maybe just not knowing what you're doing when you're out there running a TV show.
The Eagle's on the case.
That's right, Cal. 50 episodes, approximately, of Meat Eater, and I don't know how many more of my own. And yes, we have learned over the years that all of the United States, different states, and we've traveled, you know, into Canada and Mexico as well. Regulations do differ greatly from place to place. But I feel like as you know, the maker of hunting television, you have to stay on top of all those regulations. We would spend a lot of time not only researching them, but also, you know, having other people sort of be the fallback and check and make sure that, you know, our licenses were in order. That being said, we're not 100% clean. We have had some minor infractions. And when we figured out that that stuff happened, we would turn ourselves in and, you know, take care of whatever issue it was. It was always minor, nothing major like this guy. It seems as though this fella, Baloo, stepped over the line big time. And what his motivations are, I don't know. But it'd be hard for me just to accept his apology and accept that he just didn't know what he was doing and didn't understand it. I mean, he's literally the definition of professional hunter. Professional hunter needs to know what the rules and regs are.
There you have it. You know, if you disagree with Yanni, you can write into ASKCAL. That's askcal@themeateater.com, where we're going to put the pro back in professional hunter.
With just the bare necessities of life.
This week, we do have a real life, no joke pro on the show. Very special episode. Sarah Parker Pauley, the director of the Missouri Department of Conservation, is going to talk about her impressive 30-year career in conservation, what makes Missouri a leader in wildlife management, and why she supports the agency's latest controversial move to change the turkey hunting regulations. If you care about conservation and state policy, as I know you do because you're listening to this podcast, it's not a conversation you want to miss.
All right, friends and neighbors, we are on the line with Sarah Parker Pauley, who is about to retire after a 30-year career at the Missouri Department of Conservation. She spent the last 8 years as the director of the agency, which is a really big deal. I also see that you are the first female director in the history of the Missouri Department of Conservation.
That's true. Are you asking me if that's true?
I just gave you some appropriate pause to see if you wanted to jump
okay,
in there.
Okay, that sounded like a question. No, I am the first female director, Cal. And just to correct you, I started my career more than 30 years ago with the department, and I had moved around a bit to other organizations as well, and then came back as the director, as you note, almost 8 years ago. So anyway, it's a delight to join you today.
Well, yeah, thank you so much. And I think it kind of a couple of reasons I really wanted to get you on the show. One is a conservation topic that we'll talk about a little later on, but the other is just Missouri. Missouri is talked about in conservation circles everywhere in very envious tones because Missouri does things a little bit differently on the funding side because there's a tax that everybody contributes to that goes to conservation in Missouri. And I was wondering if you wouldn't mind letting our listeners know how that works and maybe how that came to be.
You bet. That is, as I go around the country and certainly as I talk to colleagues who are heading up other state fish and wildlife agencies, I often hear from them how, you know, kind of in wistful tones, how they wish they had the same sort of funding source. And so I certainly understand that. But what we call the Missouri model of conservation, it really dates back more than 8 decades ago, and it's when what we call Amendment 4 of the Constitution came about through initiative petition. And, you know, that's an important feature that our agency was really founded by our Missouri public. And then several decades later in the 1970s, once again, it was our Missouri public through initiative petition that voted for and passed the Design for Conservation, which does provide that 1/8 of 1 cent sales tax that is 60%, sometimes higher, of 60% of our revenue source. So that, you know, the Missouri model for us is grounded in citizen support throughout, from beginning until now. And it's the most important feature of what we do here in Missouri in the way of Missouri conservation.
That's amazing. And currently, are there any threats to that funding model in Missouri? Because I know in years past that there's attempts to get some of that cash for other programs and take it out of wildlife and habitat.
So, you know, we always kind of reminisce, you know, 1936 Amendment 4 passes, which does create this independent commission, a 4-member commission that I report to, that's governor appointed, confirmed by the Senate. And, you know, so that model is pretty important. That commission has the authority for fish and wildlife regulations, passes our budget, passes major policies, hires the director. So they're in the process of looking for my replacement. So they have very important responsibilities. The very first attack by the legislature of that independent commission authority was the year after the commission came into being. So 1937, they're finally in place. 1938 comes the first attack. And so it was with the sales tax in the 1970s. We've seen legislative legislative attempts to tweak or divert some of that funding, but they have not been successful. I think our citizenry, our public, feels very strongly about conservation here. And I might add, we're the only state that I'm aware of, we really have two different constitutional taxes. One is the one we just talked about, the 1/8 of 1 cent that goes to the Missouri Department of Conservation. But there is another tax that was passed maybe a decade after that one, a 1/10 of 1 cent that goes to our state parks, which is part of another agency, and soil and water efforts. So, you know, Missourians feel very, very strongly about their natural resources. And, you know, both are significant funding sources for our agency and for the Department of Natural Resources. But to answer your question, throughout time, there have been legislative attempts, not attempts through initiative petition or, you know, attempts through our public. But the legislature always ripe with good ideas, so to speak, and none that have really moved.
That's right, because not all good ideas are thought through all the way, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. So I should have put good ideas for a podcast in air quotes, but so, you know, and legislature certainly has their right to throw out some options, but we have a legislature too that is pretty committed to the Missouri model of conservation, and they know that we are recognized nationally, that the model is recognized nationally. So the vast majority of our members of the legislature strongly support what the agency does, and, you know, supports conservation in Missouri.
I do want to touch base on the citizenry of Missouri and being so proud of this. And back when I was living in Idaho, I had a friend who was from Missouri and didn't really know what all I was involved in. And when he found out that I was, you know, active in a lot of conservation efforts and working with different groups, conservation groups, he showed up my doorstep with his entire life collection of the Missouri Conservation magazine that you put out, and made it very, very clear that those were just on loan, which I thought was a pretty serious testament to Missourians and their relationship to conservation efforts in the state. So
we're pretty proud of that magazine. And by the way, you can now, there's an app, the MoConMag app. So nowadays you can download it on any smartphone. And so, but we're pretty proud of that magazine.
Heck yeah. Well, I think it's just, it's awesome that that's open to everybody there in the state and gives some more insight as to what the department's doing. So yeah, 30 plus year career. And we have, as you're setting your sights on retirement, we have all sorts of interesting things. I was just in Missouri hunting birds, hunting waterfowl, but we just had, you know, one of the more serious spikes of avian influenza roll through last year, and it seems to be not as severe this year. Chronic wasting disease is on the landscape, all sorts of things. Now, what have been kind of the biggest topics of your career, the things that the department's had to get involved with?
Well, maybe I'll hit just a couple under a couple of different categories. And so you mentioned some of the just resource challenges. So the challenges to our fish, forest, and wildlife here in Missouri. And Cal, you named a couple. We are seeing emerging diseases that we've not seen in the past. You mentioned chronic wasting disease. We spend a lot of our focus and resource on trying to minimize the spread of that to really keep that prevalence rate low. But that's not the only disease we're seeing here. And so it is concerning. And so we have added a lot of additional capacity at the department to really focus on the health side of our fish and wildlife populations, and in fact have a brand new section under our science branch and have added some additional capacity there to really do our best to determine what are those existing and emerging threats to healthy, sustainable fish and wildlife populations, and then how do we mitigate harm to them once they're on the landscape. So there's definitely, those are new challenges that maybe my predecessor certainly didn't, they had their own challenges over the last 80 some years, not necessarily those challenges, but we've also seen a lot of opportunities as well in my tenure, certainly the opening of elk season, the opening of a black bear season, and so always trying to increase opportunity for those who hunt and fish in our state. Maybe under another category of just connecting people to the outdoors. I think one of the, on the challenge side, you know this very well, just how society is changing. And it's a generational thing. It's just also a combination of many other things and other priorities. You know, we're competing for time in many other ways, but we're just seeing a society that has become more and more disengaged from the outdoors. And that is fraught with concerns for somebody like me heading a conservation organization. So under the opportunity category, we've really tried to remind people of their conservation areas. We have about 1,000 conservation areas around the state, about 1 million acres that we manage. We're trying to open our areas to new opportunities. Maybe you don't hunt and fish, but maybe you like to bike or bird, rock climb or do other things. We have a brand new branch of the agency that is focused on ensuring that we are relevant to new audiences. And so that's a generational thing, but it's also urban, whatever your background may be, we want you to see yourself as the Missouri Department of Conservation serving you. And so we've added new capacity there as well. We're focused on communities that we'll call them underserved communities, because without the Department of Conservation coming to them, I'm not sure they would even know we exist, quite honestly, or would know the programs and services. So we've really refocused our efforts on community conservation as well. So biggest challenges probably in my tenure, as you noted, just, you know, continued loss of habitat, decline in species. Missouri alone has about 700 species that are in decline. We know there's at least 12,000 nationwide. Increase in disease. You know, certainly a disconnected society. So plenty of challenges faced during my tenure, but we have really tried to reinforce all of the opportunities and to reinforce all of the benefits that conservation provides, not only for recreation, but I would say for our very quality of life. So it has been daunting, but it has been such a privilege to serve alongside my team here at the Missouri Department of Conservation.
Wow. So on the access side of things, that's one good story that made me think that we really need to get you on the podcast. So I want to hit that, but absolutely have to recognize the challenges of how these game agencies that really started as a game agency, the expectation is now to serve these broader constituencies. And then there's always this concern of if we start to say this is for everybody, are we going to lose the hunting and fishing part if the other parts decide that they don't want that anymore? So how does Missouri handle that so far? Like, what are there guardrails in place that say this is first and foremost a game agency? Do you see it as a threat? I'm piling this on you because I know you can handle it. But do you see this as, is it a threat to fish and wildlife management and the continuation of the hunting and fishing of species that we've enjoyed by serving non-hunting and fishing recreation interests?
So, Cal, that's probably not a new question posed to me. And so I'm not sure how much time you have, but I'll try to hit some high points on that one. You know, first of all, I'm going to go back to our history and our mission. You know, even back in the 1930s, though certainly the first focus of our first director, I.T. Bodie, longest serving director, I think he served like at least 15 years. But though his first focus was absolutely game species, if you go back to the original records of who those citizens were who brought about Proposition 4 that turned into Amendment 4, it was all sorts of people. It was certainly sportsmen and women, but it was also members of garden clubs in St. Louis and Kansas City. It was a pretty wide swath of constituencies that understood that if an agency could really be more independent than the existing agency, and had the law enforcement, had the science, had a little bit of the autonomy to make the right decisions to ensure sustainable fish and wildlife and forest for us, forest resources in the state, then that would benefit all Missourians. And so I'm going to tell you, even from the beginning, our mission statement has probably been a little broader than many state fish and wildlife agencies, where we have focused on sustainable and healthy populations and connecting people to those resources. Then with the design for conservation in the 70s, that promise to our citizenry in that campaign was really to offer resources to a much broader constituency than we'd even served in the past. So the sales tax in large part passed because we were promising those in the urban areas that they would have the opportunity for nature centers and new fishing lake accesses and new trails. So I feel like we've maybe had a longer go at this, at serving a broader array of constituencies. Now, it's, you know, I think it's easy to kind of get in that binary discussion of hunting and fishing or, and you and I know that those aren't the options, or they're not the only options. So we say, do we want to broaden the tent? We do. And in part to ensure that a citizenry understands the value of hunting and fishing. If we have a citizenry that doesn't even know the name of the Department of Conservation, doesn't even know that we provide opportunities for people to hunt and fish, how in the world are they going to support hunting and fishing into the future, let alone other conservation-related causes that we want them to support? So for us, the biggest concern is a disengaged citizenry that doesn't even understand or know or care. That's the biggest concern for us. And so we are a yes and. Do we want to continue to provide ample opportunities for hunters and anglers? You bet. They are our first there's like our firstborn. there are traditional stakeholders and we care about them deeply. But what we need to understand is in order to protect what they love and care about, they've got to ensure, we've all got to ensure that the citizenry cares about what they care about. So that is a big step for us. To get in, I guess, a more detailed responses on each of our conservation areas, we have an area plan and area priorities. So if an area was intended to be primarily a waterfowl area, then we're going to protect that use as a primary use. Then if we want birders and others to come along, they'll be a secondary. We still want them to see it as their area. We still want them to benefit from that. But we try to ensure that our uses, we really minimize those conflict of uses. And so sometimes that means establishing primary uses on our areas. Now, another conservation area, the primary use may be critical habitat for a species in decline, or at least a portion of that area. But that's the importance of area planning. So we know if the primary use is hunting or fishing, then we do everything we can to protect that as a primary use during the appropriate seasons, but that we don't shut the rest of the public out too, that helps support that area.
Well, first of all, binary is very hip right now. We need to be able to put our groups in tidy little boxes. But I think that was a fantastic response, because out here in the West, you may identify more as a mountain biker, but you also ski, you also hike, you also probably have a family dog. And if you're not hunting, you probably have somebody who at least gives you some elk meat during that time of year. So it is pretty comical when we get very defensive of the borders that we put around people, right?
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time. Seafoam motor treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who has used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. I guarantee you've listened to them, because I use it, you know, regularly. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
Hey, I just sat down with the owners and operators of Maui Nui Venison. You've heard that name before because I've talked about them here on this podcast. They're on a mission to balance axis deer populations on Maui while giving back to the community and run a totally sustainable operation. Now, it's wild axis deer, which is an invasive species, but this operation is monitored and observed by the USDA, and they can commercially sell axis deer.
Last time I went out to Maui to hunt axis, I did not kill one, which is where Maui Nui Venison would come in very handy for folks like me who want to get your own meat but aren't always successful and still want to have something in the freezer or handy in the form of a snack stick that is as close to getting your own as you can get, which is what Maui Nui Venison is.
You can become a snack subscriber, get some axis deer sticks sent right to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's M-A-U-I-N-U-I, venison.com. And use promo code CAL for 20% off your first order.
furthermore, when you're doing habitat work, because you want to shoot a quail or a pheasant out of that habitat, that's only a small part of the year. And if you're doing the habitat work correctly, it supports a lot more life than just the quail and the pheasant. And that's messaging that we need to make sure people understand too.
Absolutely. Cal, maybe one other thing I want to mention just about Missouri and the Midwest is perhaps is a bit different than the Western states. And that is just in Missouri, 93% of our lands are in private land ownership. So we cannot accomplish anything really. I mean, we've got a footprint of 1 million acres and there's some additional public land here. But if we're going to be successful at all, we have to have the support of our private landowners and always have. And so even with the creation of the department, really one of the first areas that was focused on was our private land work. I think we're one of the few state fish and wildlife agencies that has an entire branch of private land specialists who really focus on that engagement relationship with our private landowners. But we spend a lot of time and effort focusing on, private land cost share, technical assistance. But that also then goes to, our capacity internally, where we have a pretty healthy social science group of folks who I think our very first social scientist for State Fish and Wildlife Agency was with the Missouri Department of Conservation, Dr. Dan Witter, back in the late 1970s. Because back to that founding of the agency by the citizenry, it's been always important for us to ensure that we are hearing from our public often. Over 200,000 surveys a year go out to our public. We do a conservation monitor, which is a quarterly survey of random Missourians to ensure that they, that we are being successful in maintaining the public trust. So I think I just want to ensure that you hear from me, gauging the public's interests, gauging the public's attitudes, whether it's about a wildlife regulation or about an area, has been a key part of our formula.
Absolutely. I hear you loud and clear. There's our wildlife doesn't understand that they can't cross the 3-strand barbed wire fence.
That's right.
Would you like to talk about Swan Lake Refuge? I know that's a federal refuge, but I hear that you were very helpful in getting the hunt program over there, the area of public hunting back up and running.
Right. So I think one of my roles is to make sure that we are communicating with our colleagues in other state and federal agencies. I do think that's why relationships are so key, Cal. Relationships are key in your industry. They're key among, government to government. And I will just say that I really appreciate the responsiveness of the Fish and Wildlife Service. I think in that situation, I know they certainly were limited in staffing capacity, but it was important for the Fish and Wildlife Service higher-ups to understand just how important Swan Lake is to our waterfowl hunters, and I really appreciate their responsiveness in that instance. Yeah.
Interesting coalition there, because I'd spoken with some public land hunters through Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and then on the other side of the fence, I spoke with Tony Vandemore at Habitat Flats, which is world famous private outfitter and in a pretty darn good size private land footprint. And you could see how your public hunters and your private hunters could not align on some of this.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. I have one that is the exact same way.
Eight months old, and he was told to stay in the other part of the house, and he found a way in. So I apologize.
That's great. Yes, for those who can't see it, Sarah was just viciously attacked by her black lab. It's a good-looking bird dog from what I can see.
Thank you.
But on this access issue, it was a pretty good overlap of interests that wanted the same thing. So the public hunting program, due to a lack of funding, was shut down at Swan Lake Refuge. The public folks wanted to be out there physically hunting it, and some of the private, generational hunting recreational properties plus the outfitting properties wanted it open as well, because they want people to have places to go, and it helps move some birds around on days when they need a little bump. So I thought that was a pretty good little project that we could point to for, again, as you pointed out, it's not always binary. It's not always one way or the other. So that was a good
Absolutely.
One.
Absolutely. And, you know, it probably is also an example and a little bit of defense of the official Wildlife Service, because I understand where they're at. We still have limited resources, and there's something about, you know, infrastructure infrastructure that depends upon Mother Nature. We spend more time trying to resurrect infrastructure in floodplains or maintain infrastructure in our waterfowl areas, hatcheries. We spend a big chunk of change just trying to maintain those opportunities, and sometimes Mother Nature wins out. I'm thinking of a couple of areas that we have fought repeated floods, and we finally said, okay, maybe we need to recognize Mother Nature wins in this case and rethink how we offer those opportunities. So, you know, it's never perfect, but I will say what I appreciate about Backcountry Hunters and Anglers and Ducks Unlimited and other organizations is, when we all can come together and identify where we have that shared priority, a lot can happen.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing up Ducks Unlimited as well. I believe they had $10 million into some habitat restoration and I think some blind work there at Swan Lake. So definitely a key player. And then do you do some hunting, you said?
I'm an avid turkey hunter. I'm an avid angler. I think I mentioned to you, my husband's been a professional bass fisherman for more than 30 years. Headed to the snow goose blind here in a little while. I wouldn't be in this business for over 30 years if I am a bow hunter as well. Do the traditional things here in Missouri, but we are blessed with a diversity of opportunity.
And is that going to be ramping up for you now that
isn't
work season?
That is. I'm trying to finish my World Slam turkey wise. So I'm headed to Mexico right about my departure time. And you better believe it's going to ramp. It's going to ramp up. Everybody I've seen who's retired from the Department of Conservation, a few months out, they look about 20 years younger because they've been spending time afield and, and away from the office. So I'm hoping the same outcome for me.
Oh, that's fantastic. Do you want to talk turkey?
Sure.
So Missouri just changed their turkey regulations, and it's a big talking point from stepping foot into Rogers Sporting Goods there to hanging out with Tony for a few days. And everybody wants to know why the big change in turkey regulations in Missouri.
Yeah. So nothing like a talking turkey in the Show Me State, where we care deeply about our turkey population, and probably none more than me. I care a lot about sustaining healthy populations into the future. You know, this is something, first of all, I will tell you that we've got just a top-notch regulations committee. It's chaired by one of my deputy directors, Jason Sumners, who certainly is regionally and nationally known as an amazing biologist and just a great leader in the conservation space. He chairs our regulations committee. And so this really had been a while in the consideration. I mean, I will tell you, all day turkey season is a hot topic internally and externally. And as long as I've been at the department, you want to throw out an issue with our staff that passionate people on both sides of that discussion, and the same thing externally of can our populations really sustain the added opportunity. And so
I'm sorry, Sarah, can I just to succinctly put this, and I should have done this at the beginning here, but we're moving from, and we is Missouri, is moving from more of a conservative set of hunting regulations for turkeys to a more liberal set of regulations for turkeys. And would you mind just defining that so our non-Missourians know what we're talking about?
Cal, you say we've gone from a conservative model to a more liberal model. And so I would maybe beg to redefine that just a little bit. Missouri's always had, a pretty conservative model. And I would say we still have a pretty conservative model. But what we have done is, we've kept the season the same in the spring. We've kept the total bag limit the same. It's just we've gone from a 1 o'clock on private land only, from a 1 o'clock stop time to an all day season on private land only. So it's still a 1 o'clock stop time on public land. So as our brilliant scientists have modeled and modeled and modeled and calculated, they really believe strongly that the increased opportunity in the spirit of relevancy, in the spirit of recruiting, retaining, reactivating hunters, in everything that we talked about at the beginning of how do we ensure this next generation is engaged in the outdoors, including in hunting, we heard from a lot of our stakeholders that, you know, their kiddos, yes, the retirees could get out there and, some adults could get out there. But if we're really focused on this next generation, that the 1 o'clock stop time was a barrier. And so after a lot of discussing with our scientific team and modeling that, they do not believe that adding the all-day component on private land is going to have an impact on populations. At the same time, in the fall, whereas prior, if you were both an archer, if you participate in archery and in the fall firearms turkey season, you could get two birds, either sex with archery, and two in the gun season. So potentially it was a very small population that actually harvest for, but it was still a possibility. We did limit that to two birds in total. So regardless of method, whether you're bow hunting, whether you're firearm hunting, you have a total of two birds you can take in the fall. So in some cases, we became, a little more prescriptive or conservative fall season in which either sex can be harvested. So I believe it was a very balanced approach. As you may know, Missouri does a lot of turkey research, certainly in partnership with NWTF and other partners. We do a lot of turkey research. We've got, I think, three different turkey research projects going on right now. And we certainly would do nothing in the way of changing regulations that we think would negatively impact populations of our wild turkey. But you can imagine that we will stay very focused on how any changes to regulations might impact the populations. And if we see an impact that we have concern about, then we'll certainly change the regulation back. But I do think we found a sweet spot here where we are at least allowing not an extension of the season nor an increase in bag limit, just the opportunity for an all day on private land while being more conservative in the fall. So we think we found a sweet spot, but you can be assured we will be vigilant in determining any potential impacts.
I get the impression that this is a hotter topic than chronic wasting disease in Missouri.
Oh, chronic wasting disease is also hot, especially if you're in one of the core areas. But Where, you know what I've always said, Cal, is I would much rather have a passionate public that we may disagree with than a disinterested public. So bring on the passionate constituents who feel who have very different opinions on different topics. I'll take that any day.
That's fantastic. And or do you have any passionate topics that you're going to stay on top of here in retirement? You said you are going to be joining a few boards or working with different conservation groups, maybe?
I will be staying engaged with a couple of boards at the national level. And you know, again, R3 is an important topic for me, ensuring that we are doing everything we can to protect our hunting heritage. And so we'll stay engaged there. You know, there are a lot of topics that are of interest to me. And I think one of them, too, is just in the spirit of relevancy. We started this discussion, Cal, with kind of talking about wildlife disease and it kind of what's happening to nature. And I would say what's happening to nature is probably akin to what's happening to us, right? It's just we see that it really is, as our public becomes more and more unhealthy, it's kind of reflective of nature too. And yet I know that, you know, quality of life means that we're all thriving, that we're all flourishing, that our resources are flourishing, that our people are flourishing, the environment's flourishing. And so that connection, it kind of goes back to Leopold's land ethic of how do we better understand this interconnection between all of us and ensure that we are stewarding the land and our resources in the way we should, and it probably leads to us taking better care of ourselves as well. But that interconnection and that in that spirit of the land ethic, it's certainly a passionate topic of mine, and however I figure out a way to ensure that my voice is continued to be heard and continue to exert effort and focus where I can.
That's great. Great to hear. If you wanted to point anyone in Missouri into areas where their voices could be heard, like what is the best way to be involved in conservation in the state of Missouri?
You know, I think one of them is the Conservation Federation of Missouri. And so we talked about our founding back in the 1930s. It really was that organization, the Conservation Federation of Missouri, that was instrumental in bringing people together to create the agency. That is still our umbrella organization here, represents you know, hundreds of different organizations and members. But we're delighted that Backcountry Hunters and Anglers also has a chapter now and has involvement here in Missouri. And think that just think the world of them and just the whole grassroots focus of that organization. Obviously, I'm a big NWTF, National Wild Turkey Federation, fan and member. Pheasants and quail are very active here in Missouri. We care a lot about that organization as we do other organizations as well. So lots of opportunity here to engage.
All right, folks, that's all I got for you this week. Remember, come out to Pheasant Fest and hang out with some of us, talk about conservation, hit up the public land stage, lots of amazing people, fantastic dogs, and you get to rub shoulders with policymakers that are out there working on important things that affect all of us, like the Farm Bill. Plus, it's just like a whole lot of fun supporting one of my all-time favorite habitat organizations. The other question I get a ton of is like, what group should I join? How do I get involved? Well, one thing that PFQF, that's Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever, does really, really well is they bring in a ton of conservation groups from across the country, all under one big tent, so to speak. So at Pheasant Fest, you can eat good food, have some adult beverages if you like. You can learn about a bunch of stuff, check out brand new gear from awesome brands, play with super cool dogs, and you can go talk face-to-face with people at all these different conservation organizations and sign up for the ones that you click with. That's all I got for you this week. Thank you so much for listening. And remember to write in to ASKCAL, that's AskCal at themeateater.com, and let me know what's going on in your neck of the woods. Thank you.
Hey, I just sat down with the owners and operators of Maui Nui Venison. They're on a mission to balance axis deer populations on Maui while giving back to the community and run a totally sustainable operation.
For folks like me who want to get your own meat but aren't always successful,
you can become a snack subscriber, get some axis deer sticks sent right to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNui. Venison.com and use promo code CAL for 20% off your first order. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. That's SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.